Hi, and welcome back to the Dr. Robin Show, cutting edge issues and controversies with my wife and co-host, social worker Susie Robbins. I had a popular radio medical show, and now we are podcasting it right here, right now. If you want to email me at DocLarryRobbins@AOL, or click on our email on this website, and we'll answer emails in the next session next week, or if you want to just comment, we'll answer that and we'll put on your comments on our show. That's Doc Larry Robbins, DocLarryRobbins@AOL.com. Now we'll start off today with an herbal topic, which is medicinal herbs. Are they good? Are they bad? Are they indifferent? Pluses and minuses. Do they work? The problem with herbs is really a number of them, and I do use quite a bit of herbs in my practice. We use feverfew, we use Pitadalex for headaches, I use sleeping herbs, but do they really work? Quality control, it's not that there's really bad farms or good farms, it's just there's different in soil content, there's differences in species, weather. If something's grown in Portland, it's going to be different than in Missouri. And interestingly enough, a number of companies, prominently Consumer Reports, did surveys where they took 10 popular herbs and they took a number of preparations of that herb and they tested them. And they found varying degrees, widely varying degrees, of the active ingredient of each herb in each bottle. On average, if the bottle listed, say, 100 milligrams of the active ingredient, on average, it only had 20. Some had zero, and some did have the 100. But on average, it only had 20% of the active ingredient. There's generally a lack of good studies. You have a lot of anecdotal reports out there on TV and in the newspapers and magazines. For some reason, we've had very little oversight of the herbs. They can basically end up claiming anything about anything with some restrictions, but not that much. There are some herbal interactions, and some of the herbs have as many interactions as the drugs. For instance, St. John's wort, where the active ingredient is hypericin, this is for depression. It does work for mild depression. There's been a number of reasonably done studies, but it does have the same sort of interactions as some of the antidepressants, with skin sensitivity to the sun, with other drug interactions, etc. Now, it's not as if I am anti-natural or anti-herb. I'm pro anything that works. I don't care if it's a drug or an herb. And in fact, I'm a fellow of the American Integrative Medicine Society, which does natural things and herbs. I just don't like the public to be fooled, to waste their money, and worse, to be injured by things that haven't been tested all that well. We also have a number of herbs for various conditions. It actually hasn't been a great year for herbs. Echinacea for colds was used for, well, actually since about 1955, 1960, they sold billions, billions of dollars of echinacea. And they did a remarkable study earlier this year. This is a multi-million dollar study where they put people, it was 400 people, I believe, in each group or so, into a hotel room for a week. They gave them the cold virus, and then half got placebo and half got the echinacea, and they measured every cough, every sniff, every symptom of the cold, every sniffle. Amazing study to give people the cold virus and put them in a hotel room for a week. But at the end of the week, the echinacea didn't work any better than placebo, which was disappointing, of course, to echinacea fans and certainly disappointing to echinacea producers. But it's been that way. Vitamin E bit the dust is a natural remedy earlier this year. There were several studies that people with vitamin E actually got more heart problems. Saw palmetto for a large prostate has not been shown to do all that much recently. And so it's not been a great year for a number of herbal preparations. We also have Western versus Eastern herbs. And my impression is that the Chinese herbs and the Eastern herbs tend to maybe work better, but I'm not sure what's in there. We just have the Chinese writing on there, and they're in some quality control studies, what's been in there has not been what they claim is on there. So if quality control is a problem with our Western herbs, it's even more of a problem with the Eastern herbs. In fact, Not too many years ago, there was a big scandal where there was this one herbal preparation out of China that was helping everybody. And they confiscated over 1 million cases of it on the dock because what it actually had in it was Valium and ibuprofen, which is Advil type, and Lasix, which is a strong water pill, and some caffeine. So they threw in everything that could help anything. And it actually did help a number of things, but it wasn't the Chinese natural herbs that were on the bottle. Now I'm going to turn to my co-host, Susie, and from a lay perspective, do you have any thoughts on herbal preparations?
Well, Larry, it's funny you should ask, because I actually have had some personal experience with herbs recently, a little bit for headaches, but also for coping with menopausal symptoms, starting to get some pretty good hot flashes and night sweats. And I went to my local Whole Foods and bought some over-the-counter soy preparation. It's interesting, at Whole Foods, they actually have a section there just for women's health, men's health, children's health, etc.
Yeah, they have an enormous section there. It's unbelievable.
It was helpful because I could go right, you know, it was somewhat easier to find what I was looking for when they have everything set up that way. So I bought my little bottle of soy and I started taking it. I think I was taking two or three a day, whatever the bottle was saying. And I took them for about 3 or 4 weeks. I must say I did not really see much of a change in my symptoms. So it's hard to know if I didn't stay the course with it or not. I also was trying some Betadalax for headaches that I was having. I'd recently come off the birth control pill due to the menopause, and my migraines were really coming back somewhat forcefully. And I tried the Betadalax, and I must say I don't think it really helped me that much.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Betadalax. I think that Betadalax, it's a Petadolex. It's an offshoot of butterbur, which has been useful for headaches. Betadalax, unlike most of the herbs, has had a number of double-blind studies that have been pretty good, and we've used it for about 8 years here. I think it's actually a pretty good herb. It's one of the main things that's prescribed in Europe for headaches, and it's one of the few herbs that's really held up to scrutiny, to double-blind studies, to long-term use, and I think it's pretty safe. It's a safer form of butterbur. And the problem is people do have to take it twice a day. It takes 3 or 4 weeks to start helping headaches. It's a preventive. It's not an as-needed for headaches. But I think Betadalax is pretty good. For sleeping, we've had valerian root, which has been reasonable. It smells terribly sometimes. You can get valerian preparations that don't stink, but in general, it can make you gag. Melatonin for sleeping is not an herb, but it's a natural substance. But recently, there's been some negative studies on melatonin that it hasn't worked very well. Even 3 or 4 pills of it over the counter at night might help a little bit, but I think that it's relatively mild and people probably need a much higher dose. There's actually a newer sleeping drug, it's not an herb, called Rozerem, R-O-Z-E-R-E-M, that's based on melatonin. It's relatively natural. It's fairly mild, but it's not addicting or habit-forming, and we've had some decent luck with it, at least with mild insomnia.
You know, you've used the word safe a few times in the last few minutes regarding the usage of herbs, and I've wondered about it myself. What exactly are the concerns, if any, with taking herbs as opposed to taking medicines in terms of safety?
Well, there's two sets of side effects we worry about. Immediate, annoying ones like stomach, upset stomach or diarrhea, or bad taste in the mouth some of the herbs give, or vision problems, something like that. But the long-term side effects are what we worry about with drugs and herbs. Cancer risk, stomach ulcers, and kidney problems. Most of the long-term side effects are relatively mild or inconsequential with the herbs, although not all of them. It's more with the drugs, particularly the over-the-counter drugs. Ibuprofen and naproxen, the anti-inflammatories over-the-counter, really hurt the stomach, liver, but mostly the kidneys is a big problem too. But there are long-term side effects to some of the herbs. Nothing is completely safe. Now, segueing on, a little later in the show, we'll talk about marijuana for medicinal purposes. And if we get to it, we're going to talk about migraines. We'll certainly talk about migraines this week and or next week. But first, a couple of emails, comments from listeners from last week. We touched on ADD last week, attention deficit disorder, which affects about 5% of the population. And that's a lot. It's a very genetic illness. And we got several emails on that. One is, my 17-year-old son has ADD, is being treated, but I think that he's smoking dope. What are the problems with this and ADD, or what are the problems? What would you worry about at 17? Because he doesn't seem to see that it's a problem at all. Now, Susie, I know that you've had experience with this as a social worker working in the schools with kids with drug problems. What do you think about dope in a 17-year-old?
Well, obviously we all know that it is common that lots and lots of kids do smoke marijuana. I would never say that it's a benign drug. I think a lot of teens would say that, though, that if their parents are questioning them about drugs, many will say, well, it's marijuana. It's not going to hurt me like other stronger drugs, so don't worry about it. And I think that's precisely where kids can get in trouble with marijuana because they do feel that it's this benign drug, that it won't hurt them. But I know that you can speak to certainly the studies that have come out with young people that have smoked consistently marijuana for years and how down the road it can certainly affect their memory, their cognitive abilities, and even short term, just their memories as well as their abilities to want to get up and go to school and work and do all the other things that young people should be doing.
What do they tell you? It's only weed. Do you hear that? Have you heard that from the kids as the drug counselor?
Well, of course. And, along with that, it's only weed is that it's natural and it grows in the ground, somewhat like the other herbs we were just talking about.
Yeah, arsenic is natural, but it certainly is not so safe for you.
That's true. And, you can certainly speak more to what else marijuana does to your body, but certainly cognitively and psychologically, it can hamper an individual's desires to do what they want to do.
I also think we used to think in the 60s, 70s that marijuana was not a gateway to other drugs, but it certainly is. Maybe it's partly because the strength of the THC, tetrahydrocannabinol number 9, is much stronger than in the 70s when dope was around with that brown stuff with a lot of seeds in it. Now it's much more highly purified and stronger, 2 to 3 times as strong, actually. I've seen several studies indicate. So, I think it is a gateway, and it's a problem, particularly with at-risk kids. ADD kids are at risk. They're a number of times more likely to get into drug abuse, car accidents, and actually jail. So marijuana is a problem, but it's tough talking to kids because they just see it as sort of like this part of life and better than or le more benign than alcohol. And I have to admit that we probably have less car accidents on marijuana, although still more than if people are straight. It still does increase the risk of car accidents. But I think what it does to their lives, along with their lungs and their brain, is not all that great. And I think this is a good segue to our next segment. Oh, Susie, you want to add something here?
Well, you've brought up a couple thoughts in what you were just saying. One, that a lot of teens will think that, will understand, I will not drink and drive, but that it really is okay to smoke dope and drive, which of course we know is a fallacy, but many, many young people really feel that cognitively they can still drive just as well as if they hadn't smoked. Another point that I'd like to bring up is the fact that when a kid starts smoking dope can be important in terms of their career in drug usage. the old saying, you know, delay, delay, delay really is important in terms of teens and drug usage. Typically, if a kid waits longer to try marijuana, say maybe waiting to senior year, freshman year in college versus starting as young as freshman year in high school, there's a good chance that they won't go on and do as many drugs as if they had started early. So I think that's another point for us as parents, teachers, adults in the community is, you know, to watch when these kids are starting to smoke dope.
Yeah, that's a great point. Interestingly enough, just this morning I heard a newer drug ad on radio. And you know, a lot of these drug ads tend to be a little lame. But this one was pretty good. It had a 14-year-old girl saying, my name is Sally, I'm 14 years old, and I will be an alcoholic in 7 years because she's drinking. And the point was that early drinking, it raises our risk for alcoholism immensely if they start drinking before 15 or so. So I think delay, delay, delay is great. Some of those drug ads always were, you remember the whole Just Say No campaign? You know, just say no. I don't know if that affected many of the kids, but studies show it didn't work that well. I sort of like the one where they have talk to your parents and talk to your kids. You're the first line of defense against the kids' drug abuse. Susie, what do you think about these new drug ads now that we're talking about it?
Well, you know, there is one I've recently seen on television that I think is great. It shows various parents and their sons and daughters doing normal things like outside raking the leaves or taking a walk together or making dinner together. And what the ad is saying is you don't have to say to your kid, we've got an important talk that we're going to do tonight. They're saying that during the course of your day, when you're actually just with your kid in any type of most type of situations, you can weave that information into them. For example, you are making cookies with your daughter. While you're doing it, you can say, well, you know, I saw such and such smoking the other day, and, you know, I worry about her that she's doing it, so that your kid doesn't feel like they're having, quote, the talk. Rather, it's just part of a normal conversation. And I think that probably goes a long way in staying with the kid.
Yeah, I think we can extend that not having the talk with the dad or the mom about sex also and pregnancy and STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. I think we need to have these talks, but when it's like the talk that, you know, the dad is in the living room and the mom is really nervous and pacing back and forth and says, okay, Heather, we're going to have the talk. You know, it doesn't exactly work out very well. Now, before we get on to our last or our next subject, marijuana for medicinal purposes, I wanted to read one more letter from it was an email actually from a listener about last week's ADD program, although we did other subjects last week, but ADD was the prominent one. And she writes in that, I think that doctors and parents and teachers, for their own purposes, are much too quick to put the kids on medicine. And if we just had different school settings, we would be a lot better off. I have to admit, actually, that occasionally I think kids are put on medicines a little quickly. But in general, from what I've seen from the pediatricians and psychiatrists in my own practice, I don't think I see a lot of inappropriate prescribing or that people are just jumping, oh, you have mild ADD, let's give you a whole bunch of Adderall or Ritalin-type medication. I see it more appropriate. And the problem is that when they compare the kids at age 17 who've been treated with medicine versus non-treated, the kids who are treated are much ahead of the game as far as schooling, self-esteem, lower drug abuse, less car accidents, yada, yada, yada. So the evidence is there that early treatment does work. And it's the same with the antidepressants. People have said the same thing. Oh, we're just quick to throw around the Prozac-type medicine and get everybody on them. But I don't see a whole lot of inappropriate prescribing, particularly before age 18. Most people think long and hard before putting kids on the drugs, although it does happen. Suze, any comments?
Well, you know, on this issue, like most of these issues, you know, we're kind of the peanut gallery just talking about it. But if you've really lived through it with having a child that has ADD and wanting to do what's best for the child, you know, I could see where people would be torn. A concern about putting them on the medicine versus helping them to be able to learn in school and socialize with other kids.
Yeah, I agree totally. Well, on to our next subject, which is marijuana for medical purposes. Should we legalize it? Should we allow it? And this has been very controversial. Actually, Canada has a new cannabis-based spray, actually, that's based on marijuana type. There's a whole bunch of medications that are going to come based on cannabinoids. Cannabinoids are based on that active ingredient in marijuana, and they may turn out to have a lot of uses, not just for pain, maybe for nausea, maybe for moods. But I think on this one, you could argue both ways. The positives are that marijuana-based medicines may help pain, like with multiple sclerosis or with headaches. I know some of my patients have said over the years that marijuana does help their headaches. I never really encourage it because of what it does to their life, too. But it might help the nausea, as with chemo, or with nausea with migraines, or even glaucoma and other conditions. The negatives, it decreases motivation. The effect on the lungs, if you have to smoke it, are not great. And the benefits, though, are not 100% proven. We don't have adequate trials with most of the cannabinoids and marijuana to really say, although I think that for some conditions, the evidence is, at least the anecdotal evidence is there. Although the plural of anecdotes is just one little story, like my grandma took this and it helped her back pain. That's an anecdote. And the plural of anecdotes is not data and studies. But we do have a lot of evidence, somewhat, for marijuana. Suze, any thoughts on marijuana for medical purposes?
Well, for end-stage cancer patients, if it works, I would see where most people wouldn't have a concern if there might be some long-term effects, obviously, if they are just looking for relief for the moment, for the day.
Really, why wouldn't we use it for end-stage cancer or for people with severe disabling pain if it was going to help them? I'm not sure there are valid arguments on the other side other than maybe it's not been proven to help 100% or something like that.
When you think about all the drugs out there that are used, overused, that are accessible through a prescription, that really cause many, many people to have adverse problems because they become addictive to them, it does seem that marijuana, it doesn't seem so unsafe, does it?
Certainly has probably less side effects than most of the powerful opioids that we use, which do help. But, you know, after a lot of years and actually several centuries, we still use morphine-based opioids. It's the best that we have, but we haven't developed ones with less side effects, which is sort of amazing. Although there are a number of them in the pipeline coming.
Well, do you think many people today still see marijuana as a hippie drug, that to see it ever get legalized in our country, certainly there'd be a lot of hurdles to go over to see that happen?
Yeah, I think that there's two issues. We're talking about legalizing medicinal marijuana. Legalizing marijuana in general for recreational use or legalizing drugs is another interesting argument that you can argue both sides. Certainly, I think there's a lot better argument for legalizing marijuana than legalizing all drugs. I don't know if I want to extend legalization to from marijuana to cocaine and heroin and club drugs or whatever. But legalizing marijuana for non-medicinal uses is a whole other subject. That's interesting. I certainly think we should decriminalize it and not waste a lot of taxpayers' dollars keeping people locked up for years for use of marijuana. But I'm not sure about legalizing it. There's a lot of arguments on both sides. Well, next week we're going to talk about migraines at length. We're running out of time to talk about such a lengthy, meaty subject as migraines right now. But another call from a listener from last week. Dr. Robbins, what do you think about vaccines and the environment causing the increase in autism? Do you think that we should avoid vaccinating our kids? You know, it is interesting that we've seen an increase in autism. I think with some illnesses, we don't know if they've really increased because we didn't have adequate studies 40 years ago. And we're now talking about, we are talking about the autistic spectrum disorder, ASD, which is just like the bipolar spectrum or ADD spectrum, where we're not just talking about the severe end of the spectrum, but we've talked a lot more about the milder end of the autistic spectrum. And out of England, actually, there was a report in, I believe it was Lancet or British Medical Journal, 1999, 2000, that vaccines may, because of mercury-containing vaccines, may increase autism. And they had to actually retract that study, interestingly enough. Very few studies are actually retracted. They retracted that study because of it was actually backed by the tort association, by the lawyers who stood to gain from suing the vaccine manufacturers. And subsequently, several large studies have indicated that vaccines are probably not implicated or a problem with autism. And the problem with not vaccinating large groups of kids, such as happened after that in England, is that we see an increase in measles and all the serious things, diphtheria possibly, that we're trying to vaccinate against. We can't just stop vaccinating. Plus, we haven't seen evidence really come through in the studies that vaccines were implicated. I think it's going to be a lot more complicated than one answer with autism. And on future shows, we'll talk about the spectrum of autism. I think that it's sad that we're seeing an increase because it's difficult to be autistic. It's difficult to have a child that's autistic. It just adds complications to everybody's lives, but the kids are doing better and better these days because of better recognition and therapy, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think that we can blame it on one thing. It's going to be a combination of environment and genes and who knows what else. Well, we're almost ready to wrap up this week's program. Susie, any other interesting tidbits or items?
You know, I just saw recently in the newspaper was that plug for Madonna, and actually for once it was not about a concert of hers or some outrageous statement that she's made. Rather, she has pledged at least $3 million to a small southern African country to help with its over 1 million AIDS orphans in education and food. So I thought that was wonderful.
That's pretty awesome. It reminds me of the, on a grander scale, the Bill Gates Foundation, how much they're going to be giving to the third world and actually administrating it well, not just giving it to people who are going to waste the money. You know, AIDS in Africa has been an amazing story. There's some small successes coming through with education. And then you have on a grand scale, for instance, the leadership of South Africa denying it, just like denying anything, denying that AIDS is transmitted sexually, denying the problem, and that doesn't help anything. Some other countries, they're actually making some inroads, and a little bit of money, relatively little bit of money, goes an incredibly long way, and I think we have to concentrate on Africa with not just AIDS, but with a number of the other illnesses. We'll talk more about that in future shows, and if you want to email us with any topics, any comments, any questions, criticisms, please just click on or Doc Larry Robbins at AOL.com. We'll see you next week.